Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Bring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of bitches, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for...
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally...
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Bring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of bitches, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power. We have our national chairman, Chairman Malik Zulu Shabazz, coming on right now. Black power.
All right, Black Power, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we hear you.
Am I echoing?
Yeah, you echoing a little bit.
I'm trying to see how to stop it.
Okay, I can't hear you at all now.
More here. Okay, what I'm going to do is, Kimora, let me hang up and call you back. Let me see if I can get a better connection.
Okay.
Sister, I'll call you. I'll call right back.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes. Okay, right now we're going to stand by. We're going to wait on our national chairman to call back in right now. We've been having so many technical difficulties on this line for some reason here lately. The past two shows, we've been really experiencing that. But it is, if we're using other folks' network, I guess that's going to happen. So, but we, anyway, we're going to give him time to call back in. We have a power-packed show tonight. We really want everybody to tune in listening. Hopefully everybody has gotten the Facebook and also the number that was texted out to tune into tonight's radio show. All this is very, very important. We're getting geared up for the National Day of Action. coming up in October the 1st. Although it's some times away, we still should get organized and reorganized, and everything that we had before we must improve on. We shouldn't try to do things the same exact way. We should do things a bit differently. That's definitely going to, you know, be a uniform for working. Waiting on the chairman to call back in. Hopefully we get him to call back in. Tonight is just one of those nights, oh, I tell you. But anyway, in revolution, there's hardly any ever sleep. A lot of us work on down to the bone. We work from night hours. We burn the night oil on the terms of organizing, and it's absolutely necessary in most cases. Here he goes, 202. There we go, brother.
Am I back? Do I sound better?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
All right. Brother Kimura, Brother Kimmy, are you on?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
All right, dear brothers and sisters in the radio listening audience, sorry about the delays, but I have to make an international call here, and we have an exciting show tonight. So buckle your seatbelts. We're going to be moving fast over the next 2 hours. We're going to be talking directly to Senegal right now to a rising star in the liberation movement and a hard-working black man I have here on the line, my comrade and ally, and a man I have much respect for, and who is the new Black Panther Party representative to the French-speaking world and based in Gambia. I'm talking about Minister Kimmy Seba. He is here with us now, and we're going to be talking about our Help Africa relief campaign. We're going to be talking to him about his arrival in Senegal and after being exiled from France. And we're going to talk about how we are going to help our brothers and sisters in Senegal, not only with relief, but also a model Pan-African village that is being constructed there. So we have a lot to talk about in the first half hour. In the second half of the hour, we have Imam Bilal Sabir, who will be coming on, and he is also very helpful in this project in Senegal in Africa. He will be coming on. He has hooked us up with black shipping companies that will be helping us ship containers into Senegal and also helping with other connections he has, Brother Kimura or Brother Kimmy Seba, helping to make sure that our needy brothers and sisters get exactly what they deserve on the ground. So he'll be on on the second half of the hour. At the top of the hour at midnight, we will have the head of the Black Farmers Association, Mr. Gary Grant, who is the head of the Black Farmers Association. And Mr. Grant will be on, and also Dr. Ridley Muhammad will come on as well. And what they are going to talk about is our campaign to help the black farmers in this united front, and how on October 1st we are going to team up with the black farmers to establish farmers markets and to support them on the Day of Action and Unity and other buying programs from black farmers. Also a news conference in Washington, D.C. in the first week of September, as we back the black farmers. Anyway, it's an action-packed show. We got to get going right now. So I want to introduce to you and let you hear from, again, Minister Kimmy Seba, who is also known and more properly known as Minister Kimura Areen Shabazz. He was a new Black Panther Party representative to the French-speaking world. And before that, he has always been on the front lines for our people. He has been attacked in France and persecuted by the authorities for standing up for our people, and banned from many areas of the country and persecuted, and finally released back to Africa, and now back where his roots are from, he is dealing with the situation and helping our people in Africa and seeing the life and the reality for what it is. Minister Kimmy, good evening. Yes, how are you, comrade?
I'm fine, brother. I'm very happy to hear you, to hear all the brothers and sisters. It's a blessing for me to be in the presence of all of you. And I I want him to, many times, since my come back in Africa, I want him to be in contact with all of you because there is many things to say. And I hope that the next 30 minutes will be enough to speak about the situation in Africa French speaking, and to explain why, in my mind, Africa is in this situation, and why, in my mind, diaspora has the possibility, is energy, to do everything is possible for go ahead in the way of resurrection of our people.
Yes. Let me ask this. And he doesn't think, brothers and sisters, that he speaks English well, but I think he speaks English well. And he speaks French. Let me ask this. How do you feel? How does it feel to be home in Africa? What were what was your first thoughts when you got back?
Clearly, my brother, I think that it's a feeling of a person who felt that he was in jail for many years, you know, many times. I was released not by the French authority, but by God. I decided to go outside France, even if there was a ban against me, a ban who forbid me to go outside France, you know. But I decided to come back in Africa, exactly in the same way of Brother Kwame Ture, exactly in the same way that great mother and sister Asata Shakur, and for me it was a duty to come back in Africa because since many, many, many years, I always told to my people, to our people, to the followers of us, that it was necessary to come back in Africa because a Pan-African move out Africa, it's exactly like a football player move out the ball. You understand what I mean? A Pan-African move out Africa is a person who speaks for nothing. And it was necessary to come back in Africa and to feel the situation of Africa, to be, even if there is less thing in Africa and less possibility in many ways than we have in Occident. You must say the true thing, you know? But there is many, 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 many things and sensations that we have when we are in Africa and be with the people, even if there is many problems, even if the people is very, very poor here, you know, but the people is very, very rich in the way of spirituality, in the way of love, in the way of brotherhood and sisterhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for this reason, it was and it is always today, again today, a blessing for us and for me, a blessing for the NDPP. Because in my mind, exactly like you said before, the word that the Most Honorable Dr. Khalid bin Mohammed has told us, it was necessary to be everywhere in the world for our organization. And Africa is our throne. Dr. Khalid bin Mohammed said that. I try to take this throne today for the NDPP and for other possibility, you know, to be and to be again, to come back as a king in this world. We must take back our throne.
Yes, sir. You hear, brothers and sisters, he said we must take back our throne. As we are taught that our throne by Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad is our motherland, Africa, and our home is anywhere on the planet, on the 196,940,000 square miles. Now, this young man here was influenced by Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, as many of you who are in the radio listening audience have been influenced by Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. Let me ask you, how did you come to hear Dr. Collins? And what influence has he had on your perspective and your approach in the liberation struggle?
You know, my dear brother, I think that many of us who are hearing this show tonight, and like many of us who have decided since many years to go inside the world of the resurrection of our people, I became in contact with the work of the Most Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad when I had 18 years, you know, and 18 years old. And exactly like a person like Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who was, when he was young, was influenced by the great big brother, Hajj Malik El Shabazz, brother Omar Wale, brother Malcolm X. For me, my Malcolm X of my generation was the Most Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. When I hear him for the first time, I became crazy because I couldn't accept, in fact, that a black man was so bold, so strong, and was able to say the truth to the white authority and white America with the capital, with the leader of the Occident where I live and where I was born, when I was born. You know what I mean? And when I read his speech, when I saw his work, you know, I decided myself to be in the way of the struggle of our people. I accepted the fact that if there is one person like him who is able to do all this work for the resurrection of our people, if he had the possibility and this courage, myself, my duty was and is and will be to have this courage too. I was touched too by the fact that he has the intelligence to unify all the approach of spirituality, African spirituality, teaching of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the way of 5%, the way of black liberation theology, and all way and black Jew teaching too. You know, I didn't know other person who were able to do this work. And for be more honest, you know, always honest, but more, in fact, I prefer him than a great brother like the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because when I heard Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, I understood that the teaching of Master Farrakhan Muhammad was for all black people, for all Africans. I understood this teaching and the axis of Pan-Africanism. And no other person was able to give me this approach and this feeling. And I decided to dedicate my work to a man like him. The first organization that I create with other black students in 2002 years, you know, there is 9 years ago when I create the Kemet Party, the person who was on the logo of this organization, there was 2 persons. The Professor Cheikh Anta Diop and the Most Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. That is 9 years ago. It was a person who inspired us the more. And today, being in the New Black Panther Party is a consecration for us. It is is the best way for us for go ahead, going ahead in the way of resurrection of our people.
Yes. Now, you spoke on the spiritual aspect of the teachings, and you also earlier indicated that even though the conditions in Senegal are rough, that the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood amongst our people is still good. And what we want to know, you know, we're here, we're working on a project here in the United Front. And we approach also, we get this from Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who teaches us the unity of all of the approaches, again, in the liberation struggle, and emphasizes a common goal, like Minister Malcolm X, who came before him, a common enemy, a common goal, and a common destiny. Also like Donovan Marcus Mosiah Garvey and many others who have come before him.
Exactly.
We're trying to do now, and following up on his work in the New Black Panther Party and building a united front, what we have here now on the line, even represented on this broadcast, other allies and partners from throughout liberation organizations in the black nation. We're trying to help to do what we can for Africa. You know, we don't like to see the European or the white man always on TV acting like he's helping Africa. We don't know what he's doing. But we do know that those that say that they are for Pan-Africanism have to show concrete support for Africa in deeds and not mere words. Because the people in Africa, our brothers and sisters, need help. And so, as we're trying to send, we're going to let brothers and sisters know that we're trying to get a 40-foot or a 20-foot container of several tons. I think it's up to 3 tons. Either 1.5 tons for a 20-foot container or 3 tons for a 40-foot container. And what we're trying to do is, and what we're going to do is, gather clothes that are in good condition, shoes that are in good condition, and school supplies, and to load them up out of Baltimore, dear brothers and sisters, and load them up, and with a black shipping company, be able to soon, I mean inside of 8 to 10 weeks, I would say, about 10 weeks or less, to have these tons of supplies or this container make a first shipment into Senegal. Whereas you hear from our brother, he is one that is rooted in the struggle, and we have trust in him and we love him. And others that we are working with there on the ground in Senegal, we know that our goods, if we are able to raise them, and we're going to raise them, we're going to have to work hard and raise this 40-foot container. Let me ask you, Brother Kimmy, if these supplies of clothes and shoes and school supplies, if they are to reach you and those that will work with you there in Senegal, how much appreciated would it be?
I know that if you are able to bring and fix it, beloved brothers and sisters, beloved family, if you are able to send that myself in Africa, in Senegal, if you are able to send that in the school, for example, at the city where I am, in the Somon, for example, a city where there is a lot of desperation, a lot of sadness, if you are able to send that, I know that many people, like already, it is already the situation, but if you are able to send all these supplies, many young black brother and sister will be blessed, and they will tell themselves that they are blessed, you know, for all this help. And they will feel themselves like human beings, because they will understand that they are helped by the black family. The problem in Africa is not the help. The problem in Africa is where the help comes from. When the help comes from the white people, when the white people help black people, it's not for black laws. It's not for the resurrection of our people. If always for the way of be the master who helps the slaves. You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But when the black people, big black brother and big black sister, you know, are able to help the family, the people will be very happy, and they will feel themselves like human beings. And we have the possibility, but there must be a very good communication, you know, and very good information in that way. We must prepare that very strongly. But if we are able to send that, the brother and sister, I know that many, many, many people in this city, in Africa, because we must enlarge this feeling and this situation, many people will be very happy for this help and for this all the supplies that you will be able to send. And I think that for the NDP and for the Black United Front that you are creating today, you know, it will be a very good opportunity to show that everything we said, you know, in our meeting, or everything we said in our talk show, you know, it's not only for the show. It's because we love our people and we know our duty.
Yeah.
I think that it will be a very good opportunity, the brother Malik Zulu Shabazz, to send all the supplies. I would be very happy, and I think that it will be a very good opportunity to show, exactly like you said before, concrete action. Because the people is tired by the word, by the long speech. But the people need long and long and strong action, real action.
Yes. Dear brothers and sisters, you hear what he said, that people are tired in Africa, just tired really in America, of long, long speeches. They want to see concrete action. And now I want you brothers and sisters to understand that we have committed brothers and sisters here that are with us now on the ground in Africa. And when we send supplies there, guess what? We're not just sending supplies, but we're sending also, we're backing a message and an ideology with the supplies. Because if we have a young man here and a team here that is committed to Pan-Africanism, already rooted in the new Black Panther Party, and certainly have the capacity there and anywhere in the world, in the French-speaking world or beyond the French-speaking world, to build a united front for our people, even in Africa, when we are able to deliver to them goods and items that help to clothe them and to help them along better in their life and to be educated in school and to bring some relief to them, what you do, it means that your message of black nationalism and Pan-Africanism is going to resonate deeply.
Mm-hmm.
It means that they really are going to see the program and the ideology that we're talking about, but they're going to feel it with warm clothes on their body and shoes on their feet. And then in that shipment, if it goes the way we want to go, goes the way we would like it to go. You see, my dear brother, we would like to include in the shipment some copies of or some excerpts from Message to the Black Man.
Mm-hmm.
And have also some writings or some copies or excerpts or copies out of Sheikh Anta Diop, The Origin of African Civilization. And if we have to translate it into French and have it written in French and delivered with the school supplies, we deliver some other supplies for the minds of the people that could put some information in their mind that would also help them, that will go along with the supplies. You know, I think that we will make progress. And we want to help this young man here and the brothers and sisters that we have on the ground in Senegal, because if they know that if they are able to produce for the people are going to buy into and accept liberation that much faster. And so all of those who are listening, we are now at that point. We've been talking for a couple of weeks. But we are now at that point where we have organized this situation enough where we have confidence in our allies on the ground, and that the supplies will be delivered to the people and nothing will happen where they end up being resold on the market. And so now that we're building and can certify to you on this radio broadcast that these supplies can be delivered, and we'll be certifying to you tonight that they can be shipped by a black shipping company, then we're going to get busy right now and get busy from this night forward in the cities, mainly on the East Coast, in New York and Philly and Newark and Jersey and Virginia and Atlanta and Georgia and other areas, getting these supplies into Baltimore. We have to get like maybe 2 to 3 tons of supplies into Baltimore, and we're going to raise probably about $4,000 to $5,000 to cover shipping costs and storage costs and some transportation costs. And that's nothing, dear brothers and sisters who are listening. $5,000 is nothing for the black man and the black woman of America here. I've seen that raised in one Nation of Islam mosque meeting in 130 minutes. And I'm not talking about Mosque Mariam. I'm talking about just a regular mosque. Well, we're going to have to put our money where our mouth is. And y'all, for those who have been asking and saying they want to donate, now's the time we're going to come back to you. For those who are saying you've been gathering your clothing and your supplies, and where do you send them? Now we're going to reach to you over the next 7 days and designate and tell you how you can help us get these supplies down into Baltimore. And for those who have vehicles and vans and trucks and who want to help and maybe get a U-Haul truck and rent it from New York and pick up supplies down the East Coast to Baltimore, and those who may want to donate or get a truck and drive it up the East Coast from Atlanta, even from Chicago or other areas in the Midwest into Baltimore, now is the time for you all to step up. And let's help Africa and show that us, that we are not just all talkers here in the West, and that we cannot just talk about Pan-Africanism or black nationalism or helping black people, but we can move some goods across the waters. And if we can move these goods across the waters, dear sisters and brothers, maybe one day we could wake up and even move some other goods of not only relief supplies but trade, and mutually beneficial and mutually respectful trade with our motherland. And also that we would be able to even establish areas of repatriation, areas now where we can move black human beings across the water and have them to come into a back to Africa, and in a way that makes sense. And on that note, I want to go to the next part of this conversation, then we'll let our brother go. We woke him up early, but he will be back over and over again, and you will be able to read about this project and other projects and what he is doing on our website, dayofactionmovement.org. And he has a website he'll give out shortly. But now, even on a more progressive level, he is involved in the building of a Pan-African village in Senegal. And there are areas, you know, our brothers and sisters need housing in Senegal. They need it really all over Africa, but why not start where we have connections and where we have already organized. He said, we already blessed by work we've done before. And now God has blessed us to have the connections. And so now many of you saw it on my Facebook page, and we'll be putting it up on the website soon. There is a Pan-African village that providing better housing and facilities for our people in Senegal. And it will not just be houses, but there will be an ideology and a teaching behind the housing that could be a model for Africa.
Teach.
And so what we want to do now is to have him tell you, explain something about this Pan-African village, because it is a project that we are strongly considering backing. And this relief project is just the beginning to opening the door for this also. A Pan-African village, brothers and sisters, where you can help brothers and sisters in Africa live better, have electricity and running water, and also a place where you can go.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can go. Now, we can't save the world here. Let me get me front. We can't turn all of our operations into either one category, a relief operation or a... There's so much to be done, but we have to do our part. That's what we're saying here. We're going to meet our burden. We're not going to just let the white man do all what he and the Chinese and everybody run around Africa, and we sit here and talk Africa. So, my dear brother, tell us about the village, the vision behind the village, and explain to us, you know, the need for it. You told me about the conditions, about the electricity being off in parts of Senegal for 20 hours a day. You tell me the rising frustrations of the people. Tell us about the village and the conditions in Senegal and how the village will help maybe to ease those harsh conditions.
Yes, sir. My beloved brother, my big brother, all my black brother and sister who are coming here tonight, I will try to be not long, but I will try to be strong, like sir, our father. Excuse me in advance for the mistakes that I will do in the way of speaking bad English, but it's not my original language, you know. Clearly, this Pan-African village is a conclusion who come from many of us who are understood since many years that the better way for be respected by the other is to have proper home in the throne of our people in Africa. No Africans in the world will be enough respected, if they are not descended home in the Mother Earth and in this throne with Africa. We understood that the better way for being respected by our African family too, in the African continent, is to create for them better home, better opportunity for have electricity, better opportunity for have a new home, who have an ideology of Pan-Africanism behind them. You know, we understood that the way that Marcus Mosai Agave, the project of the Honorable Marcus Mosai Agave, was not only back Africa, because all people are able to come back in Africa. But not all people are able to stay in Africa and to create in Africa. The project of the most honorable, our father, our big father, the grandfather, the Honorable Marcus Mosai Agave, was to create a new Africa, create a new way of thinking for Africans, create the way of autodetermination, self-determination in Africa. The project of this black man was to do for us what we are able to do for the other. Think for ourselves, like teach the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Work for ourselves. Create for ourselves. For us and by us. Like said the Mark Fubu, as you know better than me. we understood that in this Pan-Africanist village, the better way for be understood by the people here was to give them employment, you know, employ themselves to create their own home. Their own home in the would be in the way of new ecology. We respect the nature. Because like our brother and father, the Muslim, Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, if you are able to respect the nature, you will be able to respect God. Because in the middle of nature, nature is the world, original world who gives us the world nature after. The person who respects the nature respects God. And the problem in Africa today is that many people, because they are so desperate, don't have the teaching and the understanding to respect the nature. We wanted to give them this possibility to understand again, to re-understand the way of being an original man, you know, original man who mastering the nature and who mastering the environment. We decided to create this village because we wanted that the farmer in Senegal and in Africa could be able to profit to their own creation. And we wanted that these people could not be desperate to see a product imports from Europe in Africa or imports from China in Africa. Surely in the way that we have better produce than Europe or China. We have better produce that they don't have, the farmers didn't have before. Brothers and sisters were able to magnify their product and to give them a tribune, you know, for be known by all the world. Today we have people, we are farmers in this Pan-African village, you know, we are a commercial center where we can have the possibility to find their product, to find their milk, to find their cheese, the cheese that they created, you know. All this agriculture, Pan-African agriculture is necessary. Mm-hmm. For the economy of Senegal and for the economy of Africa. Mm-hmm. And we decided to build two homes for the diaspora in the coast where we are not able to find that in the Occident, in America or in Europe. In Dalajan village, if you are $40,000, you can have a great bungalow in Dalajan village. A bungalow that we will not be able to find in Occident. This bungalow, if you find that in Europe or America, this bungalow will cost $1 million or $2 million. But with this little cost, we are able to give money to all the farmers and to all the masons who build home, because we want to reconnect the diaspora with the African here. We don't want, again, an example of a conflict between the diaspora and the original Africans, you know, that we were able to find in Liberia, for example. Mm-hmm. It's a very sad example of mm-hmm. Of unity in our family. We must be humble. We try to be humble, because the way for be respected by our brother and sister is not to come here and say we are the teacher and they are the student. If we come in that way, they will refuse to be our brother and sister, because, you know, the white devil, the white man, was strongly able to devise ourselves, saying in all the party that the one party is better than the other. And when black brother or black sister come and say, I want to help you. If he come to help, like a white man, he will be hate by the other party. We try to respect them and try to show them that they are our father, we are children, you know. The children have the possibility to help them. And in that way, they could be able to understand them. And when the people, there is many person who inspired, and we need many other, like you, big brother, and like you, brother and sister. We need many other people who are able to give money for investment, you know, for create home, for create new home, for create new commercial center, because it's a project and is a Pan-African city and Pan-African village, and we can be enlarged in each family. If one person is able to give investment for himself, but for the other two, you know, for himself, when I say for himself, if you are able to give money for creating a new home, a very big home in Africa, it will be a good deal for you. But it could be the possibility to give money and employment to other people who don't have employment today. You understand what I mean? And this Pan-African village is a village where you can find many aspects of the Pan-African ideology of resurrection. Self-determination, knowledge of self, and work for us, by us. None white master, none black imperialist are able to help us in that way. The people who want help us can help us with a way of create home. It's not assistance. It's not assistance like we can find in a right organization. Humanist, so-called humanist organization who won't help the poor Africa. It's not that way. You help giving money, but in back you have home. It's not assistance. It's a connection for work of reconstruction, for the work of building. And it's our way. And I wish strongly and deeply that the people in America and the people in Europe, our black people, will be able to understand that it's necessary to make this investment. Because it's a very great defy for us to show to the world that the Pan-African society, like the African Mosaic, and a Pan-African village like Dalat Diem, and a Pan-African organization like New Black Panther Party, is able to do for ourselves what the others are not able to do for our black people. We must show to the world that we are able to do all these things for ourselves. If you are not able to show the viability of this project, all people will understand that the black people need the other people, the Chinese, the European, the American, and it will be strongly said. And it will be a message of desperation for our people. But if the Pan-Africanists are able to make this investment, all this investment will show to the world that a new generation is born in Africa. And this new generation will never let the possibility to the other people to assist our people, because today we are not slaves yet. We are not slaves again. We are master of our destiny. That's the message that you need to show to the world.
All right.
For this reason, I'm waiting for all the connection and all the help of a diaspora in America, in the hell of North America.
Yes. Dear brothers and sisters, you all should study this broadcast very carefully. You all should, and I want to give him a strong black hand just for his effort, just even in the English. You know, we've all been robbed by the white man. And we speak his French or we speak his English. On other occasions, even his German or his Spanish. But I want to give him a strong hand. He sounds good to me. And I need y'all to go back and listen to this carefully and listen to the words of a young black man who's around 30 years old who have been fighting for our people consistently and constantly over the last 10 years and who was touched by Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad and have joined up now with his family in the new Black Panther Party and is serving a vital role right now in Senegal. And he will be back in the near future. And we're going to talk much more about, well, we're going to talk very soon about how the progress is going with this Help Africa project as we make our word bond and get these supplies to Africa. But then we're going to talk more about the Pan-African Village. But if you want to know more right now, I want you to go to this website. It's africanmosaic.com. And it's spelled AFRIKAN-MOSAIQUE.com. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, brother.
Okay, let's come at it again, dear sisters and brothers. You've seen it on my Facebook page. It's still there. Not too long ago, maybe about 8 posts ago. I'll repost it tomorrow. But also, you can go directly to the website. It's African-Mosaic.com. That's AFRIKAN-MOSAIQUE.com. And you can see other projects that we are looking seriously at and likely to support strongly. As he says, helping and employing black farmers in Africa, helping black masons and builders in Africa, helping homes for our people in Africa. And then there's an ideology and a new culture and civilization rooted in such village that could serve as a model for a new world order for Africa and also serve as a new model for a new way of relations. A new standard of relations of how we in the West, or we who are listening from England, or we in the diaspora scattered in all of these countries, a new way in our new relationship with Africa where we take the lead in the redevelopment of Africa and don't take the back seat. We have to run, brother. Thank you for taking your time. I love you so much. I'll be speaking right back with you. We have a lot of business to handle, but I thank you for getting up early and being with you. We're honored.
I love you, Marvin, brother. I love you, Marvin, brother. It's a blessing for me, more strongly. And I know that everything that we are doing tonight and everything that we are doing since many times is historical. And it will be a legend for the new generation, for the next generation. We must do our duty. And because there is brother, big brother like you, I know that everything is possible. And it's for this reason, too, that we are able to have this courage to do what we are doing. Peace be upon all of you, big brother and dear brother and sister. I love you, big brother, Attorney Malibu Chairman. And I'm waiting for you next call. Please be
important. Thank you so much. Wa alaikum salam. You have been listening to Minister Kemi Seba. That's K-E-M-I, last name S-E-B-A. Also known as Minister Kimor Arim Shabazz. You're listening to him live from Senegal, fresh out of exile from France. And he's one of our allies in the United Front, and certainly a top soldier and helper here in the new Black Panther Party, and a great asset to all black people who are in the French-speaking world. Sister Amira, I need you to find area code 703. We're expecting Bilal Sabir to come on in a moment to talk further about Africa and helping Africa. I'm going to click Minister Kimor off.
Yes, sir.
And I guess he'll listen by by computer if he can, or he'll pick it back up. We thank him so much. I'm going to click off and come back. I'm going to come right back.
Yes, sir. All right, brothers and sisters, call in. Looking for that brother. Actually, he has not called in yet. He has not called in yet. Okay. Still waiting. No, sir. Has not called in. Okay, here we go.
All right, I'm back. Yes. I know we're running behind. Am I back?
Yes, sir, you are.
All right, thank you so much, Sister Amira, for your guidance in the show and help. I know we're running behind, and so I'm going to move quickly. This is a power-packed show. We're running behind. It's really not just a show, brothers and sisters. What this is you're looking at the work of liberation in progress. This is all the show guests and the topics relate to a work that we're doing and objectives that we're trying to achieve, so we can look and say mathematically that we're moving in the direction of liberation. And all this information is in accord and synced up with powerful moves that we as a united front are making across the board. Let me move quickly. Did we have area code 703 up?
No, sir, not yet.
Bilal, well, check. We got. Are the lines clear? Is it open for somebody to call in?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
It is clear, and do we have a 703?
No, sir.
Okay, well, we may have to save him for next week. We may have to see. And if you're listening, Imam Bilal Sabir, you can call me on my cell phone right now and tell me that either you can't get in or you want another number or something. I think he said 703. I'm hoping he told me that. Brother, call me if you're listening and on another line or can't get in so we can bring you in. Mr. Gary Grant, who is the president of the Black Farmers Agriculturalist Association, should be holding by also. Do we have a 229 holding?
Yes, sir, we actually do. They don't have
we have a 229 holding. We do?
We just did. Not now, we don't. They hung up.
They'll call back in at 229. Dr. Ridgely called back in with Brother Gary Grant. And I'm hoping we have a 703.
No, sir, not yet.
All right, well, let me just say what Brother Imam Bilal Sabir was going to talk about. And he can come back on next week. And we're working right now to expand these shows really to 5 days a week. We have to get some other hosts, but there are certain subject matters that we got to address that need the whole broadcast. You know, the Ministry of Education needs a broadcast. There are other ministries here. Now, what I need y'all to understand is as we wait for this 229 to come back up here, that this is serious. We're not just playing here and talking. This has been a journey since April 23rd through June 25th. Headed through October 1st, and there's a science to what we're doing. We're not just having events, having radio broadcasts, just doing things randomly. But we've been doing things randomly in the Black Nation for at least 20 years that I've seen. And for others and elders in the community, they've seen it for many more years beyond that. We're talking about here, staying focused. We're talking about here, preparing for the next day of action, October the 1st. But the day of action being coordinated into a program of nation building, obviously worldwide from what you've heard tonight, and being coordinated, so every day of action takes us further down the road to liberation, and every day of action has a more deeper and significant meaning. Now, tomorrow in New York at 12 noon and 1 Hogan Place in Manhattan, at 1 Hogan Place in Manhattan at 12 noon, the Women's Ministry of the United Front, the New Black Panther Party, our brothers and sisters from Guinea, Sister Kiatidou Diallo, mother of Amadou Diallo, City Councilman Charles Barron, and others will be having a news conference in front of the District Attorney's Office in Manhattan dealing with the case of Dominique Strauss-Kahn, arrested for sexual assault and sexual crimes against a black woman from Guinea, an African queen from Guinea, who was a maid at the hotel where the old dirty devil was staying. Everybody has come out on this devil. It's now, they say, when he awaits, if he ever gets back to France, which he should not get back there. Other women now have come out saying that he's molested and raped them in interviews, and they're popping up everywhere. And this beast had put his hands on our sister, and now they have taken this beast off house arrest and let him run around in the streets, reduced his bail from $5 million and $1 million cash, I think, and took the bail off, claiming credibility problems with the accuser. I smell politics. This is the head of the IMF, Strauss-Kahn. I smell politics and politics. But we have been fighting back. We don't see no credibility problem with a black woman from Africa. We see a credibility problem with Strauss-Kahn. That's who we see the credibility problem with. We see a credibility problem with a prosecution with evidence that they have reported and DNA and injuries to this black woman's vaginal area as cause for this dirty old man to remain under house arrest and then some. And so we will be rallying at his home. There will be a rally at his home pushed and sponsored by the United Front and many others at 6 p.m. We will be at his doorstep putting a spotlight on him at 6 p.m. after he had been arrested. And you know they don't arrest no head, no IMF head over no lightweight causes and lightweight evidence and for transient reasons. But the brothers and sisters from Guinea are fired up. Sister Khadija Shakur have been on the point, and others. And so at 12 noon, a news conference in Harlem. At 6 p.m., a rally at the home. Strong rally. I'm going to be there to put my piece in. And they will be there every Thursday at the home of Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Kahn. Not Kahn, but Kahn. Oh, German. 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 Frenchman, German. Sound like a German name, whatever. They all the same. The bottom line is a poor and defenseless black woman needs defense. She needs support. Any black woman that has been a victim of a sexual crime knows that that you need support, and the victim don't need to be put on trial. And the only way to get in and turn the tide is to do what we're doing now. And so keep watch and keep posted as we move on this objective. There's already been a flood of calls to the district attorney, and the hearing that was set for July 18th, the DA announced that he had pushed it back. They were supposed to drop the charges on the 18th outright, but that had been pushed back. We believe it's due to some of our efforts, but we have to bear down and intensify now and go after and put our arms of protection around this sister and build a movement where we crush any beast that put their hands on a black woman as the ultimate end objective to defend our queens and our goddesses. Anyway, I could go on all night and I won't.
Sir.
Did we get a 703 in?
No, sir. 229 we do.
Okay, we hold on 229. We'll have Imam Sabir, Bilal, come on. Bilal Sabir, strike that, come on next week. And he will, he's helping on the ground in Senegal. He has other connections on the ground that we're teaming up with our man, Kimi Siba, on the ground to make sure that brothers and sisters that need it get it, and that it gets from the port to where we got to go. That our brother who is there has other allies and other connections that we have that will help him as we work in unity. We're trying to, as much as possible these days, to work in unity and to show our people that we can put aside differences and work together and achieve common projects together. And so I want to thank him, the Imam, Bilal Sabir, because he has also hooked us up with the Black Shipping Company and making sure that if we raise this money, we put it in the hands of our people as we build shipping ties and contacts and connections to ship charitable goods and goods for trade to Africa. That is, this is where we're getting started. Dear sisters and brothers, I'm going to bring you on in a minute, Air Code 229, but I need y'all to take a pause here and to take seriously what we're doing. This is not a play thing that we're playing with. We're talking about building a structure, a movement, an agenda, a schedule, and an itinerary where we can see liberation and get beyond rhetoric. We're talking about getting there and also being patient and mature and understanding that liberation is a process. There's so much I want to do right now. There's so much that a Ministry of Education can do right now. There's so much that Ministry of Technology can do right now, but there's only so much one man can do. And so if I got common sense, I'm going to try to work with others. And I'm working every day to build relationships with other black leaders that believe in self-determination so we can carry out the general goals of black, what we call black nationalism or Pan-Africanism or a nation of our own. But it's no secret that I do need, we need help, and I need help. And we need help to the extent that we have to first come to a knowledge that liberation and revolution is not a process, and it's going to take hard work. It ain't about no one day. Have one great day and then fade away. This is something the white man don't give up on no day. White supremacy is every day, every hour, every time that clock ticks. In London and D.C., the white supremacy is a machine. And so it's time to toughen up, brothers and sisters. That's what I'm saying. It's time to toughen up and dig in and understand that we are at a unique, we got a unique thing here. You got to understand it's not often that you got this kind of movement that we're building now in these 41 cities and more cities and allies and people coming on board with us from across and overseas. And the leadership of the black farmers now coming into unity with us and solidarity with us. It's going to take time. We'll be all the way going into the end of the year, next year, before all of these ministries are up rolling and carrying out their assignments. But right now, we got a heck of us. We got a heck of a mission. If you on October 1st, if you're with us in any one of these cities on October the 1st, we need you to tell us right now where you're going to be. We want to get your flyers out now. No more procrastinating. No more waiting till 5 days before an event, 2 days. We'll be late to heaven, as the elders used to say, late to your own funeral. Now, come on, brothers and sisters. What we're talking about now is going to the next level on October 1st. What we're talking about now is doing it better and stronger than you ever did it. We're talking about going deeper. And so as we bring on the black, my brothers who are in the black farming community, we have struck an alliance and striking an alliance with the Black Farmers Association. I'm talking about the United Front here and those that are with this. What United Front? That United Front that consists of key members in the Nation of Islam, key members in the new Black Panther Party, key members in that mighty organization, even the National Black United Front, key members from the church community, key members from other Kemetic or African-centered societies, key brothers and sisters that just ain't in no organization. They just got some keys. They got some knowledge and some degrees, and they want to help. This is that time. And so on October 1st, what we're talking about is taking, I'm striking a relationship with black farmers, getting their goods to your event, your event in Atlanta, your event in Dallas, your event in New Orleans, and at your rally or your demonstration or your town hall meeting right there, either in the basement or the parking lot, there's also a setup for the black farmers. And so you will have advertised that you're having your rally, your town hall meeting, your demonstration, but you're also having a black farmers market. And that you're taking a stand to support our land and our brothers who are working our land to introduce black people to healthy food from their own black farmers. As we're going to go about setting up buying clubs. And you all will subscribe in these different cities and counties, and on a regular or monthly basis, you know that you are committed to $25, $40, $50 to buy a certain amount of vegetables or fruits or non-perishables from black farmers, that you're committed to this program that is being put forth by our Ministry of Agriculture in the United Front. Huh? Are you ready to go to that level? Are you ready to see in different cities the products from black farmers on regular farmers markets in the black community? I think October 1st is a great time, this time to step this up. With that being laid as a base and a foundation, I want to bring on here now and thank him for staying up late. He's the president of the Black Farmers Agriculturalist Association. He is a man that has been rooted in the struggle for black farmers and fighting the battles from Washington, D.C. and out in the field. As we have been losing land rapidly and losing black farmers, I want to bring on and also bring on with him Dr. Ridgely Muhammad, who will help us in this educational part of this program, meaning that I'm going to ask a few questions and get out of the way and let the black farmer talk to the president, Mr. Grant, so that we can get into some science and education so y'all can understand that farming ain't slavery. And y'all got to stop running from even the thought and the language and the science and the culture of black farming, thinking you're going back to slavery when you're running to slavery. When you should be running back to support your own land. There's nothing goddamn wrong with picking cotton long as you're picking it for yourself. How you think your shirt made? I'm starting to preach. Look, bring me on Mr. Gary Grant. Is Mr. Grant, are you on? You know, I can go on all night.
Yeah, Gary, you there?
When I'm on Black Power Radio, I can go on all night. Mr. Grant, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, sir. Hello. I can hear you, dear brother.
All right.
All right. I want to introduce you all to Mr. Gary Grant, head of, again, the Black Farmers Agriculturalist Association. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing okay. Thank you very much. Other than my heat, but we are managing that as well. As you're talking, we are people of survival.
Yes. Well, tell us about... Well, tell us, I guess, about how we came to this radio show, this conversation, from your perspective. How did we get to where we are now, where we're discussing teaming up with the black farmers for our National Day of Action and Unity, October 1st? And
well,
also,
that was due to,
yeah,
that was due to the tele, the radio program that you did with Dr. Ridley Muhammad there, and that he and I had a conversation, and then he got you on the phone, and you and I started talking about and this what we had in common about how the liberation of our people is dependent upon our people. And I think that that is basically in the days of that you're talking about, October 1, on how the movement is growing and the diversity among our people that it is being put together.
Yes. Well.
And that you were educated about what was happening to the black farmer and happening to the economic base that these farmers have throughout, primarily throughout the South, but throughout America here.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then. You know, the day of action and unity. We're trying to, you and I discussed in our conversation, the disconnect, as you say, between your city cousins and the black farmer. And obviously,
right,
we're trying to bridge that gap. And also trying to make people aware that, you know, we don't want to make it seem like a charity case. I mean, we need to support black farmers for their survival. But could you help our listening audience understand the benefit to them? Whatever city you may say you're in, what is the benefit to them to support black farmers and to eat healthy?
Well, to the whatever city that they're in, they should ask themselves, first of all, where is the nearest grocery store and what is it carrying? And the benefit to them of supporting the black farmer is not just the one day of that movement, but because these folk are trying to make a living and by growing good food that is not contaminated to the point that it is doing things to our bodies, and I'm sure Dr. Ridley wants to jump in and talk a little bit about that, and that you can't have just, you say that this is not charity, and you're absolutely right, and you can't have just one day. This has to be something that's ongoing because the agribusinesses have taken over the, you know, the supermarkets and everything, and there's, if you don't join in that piece, that the farmers don't have places to get their food sold, and this is good grown food that has not been pesticided to death, sprayed to death, and it's fresh, it's healthy, and it helps us all to have more healthy bodies and minds so that we can be about the business of liberation.
That's good. Brothers, can you help? One problem that we're having is that the post-traumatic, the effects of slavery and the trauma that has been inflicted on us through generations have given us a adversity towards the farm, a negative impression of being associated with the field and farming. What strategies and tactics do you think we can use to overcome this?
Well, the first thing.
Or what do we need to know?
We are an agrarian people to start out with, and true, we were brought here as slaves, and we helped to build. We built this country, and have no compensation for having done it. But at the same time, besides slavery, we went through a period of Jim Crow where there was sharecropping, which was just as bad as slavery because you worked all the time and you never had anything to show for it, or so we thought. But our ancestors had accumulated about 17 million acres of farmland by the time the turn of the century, the 19th century. And even though you left the farm, that is fine, but as a city cousin, you left cousins in the South who want to farm, and that farmland is an economic base for the black community, the African-American community. It is an economic base. It is makes people independent because you're not answerable to having to punch the clock for the man in the morning. Now, that's fine if that's what you're doing, but what happens that we exactly right now what we're experiencing with their, with the unemployment rate in our communities and all, that the land that is owned by the farmers is what will sustain the economic movement that we that you're talking about, that you're beginning to build, and this is just one component of it, and it has to be all of us supporting one another in order for it to take place. And I don't know whether I'm making that clear enough, but many of us just say, I don't want anything else to do with the farm. Well, you still got to realize that when you go to the grocery store, the food is coming from somewhere, and you need to determine whether you want the processed food or whether you want some real food that's going to help your body be strong and your mind be strong.
All right. So, brothers and sisters, what we're doing is we're talking about making a distinction here between live food and dead food. Food here that is live and healthy for you versus food that have been processed and almost to a certain degree embalmed, and that is not healthy food that is going to help you to eat, I mean to live by eating right. We're talking about here an educational shift in the mindset that we can help in this movement. We can change our minds and help influence the minds of the people about away from being adverse to cooking. Running up in a grocery store, just thinking because you got you a canned peas, you may not be doing nothing doing that.
Well,
and so, you know, we're talking about returning back to healthy cooking. We're talking about understanding an educational process in the community and putting it forth in this agenda as we push about healthy eating and getting our people to reconsider the eating paradigm that they are engaging in. There's so much to be said on that. I'm going to let Dr. Ridgely Muhammad take over in a moment. What I want to say is that on September the 6th in Washington, D.C., the United Front here for Black and African Peoples, Ministry of Agriculture, is going to be putting on a seminar and a news forum at the National Press Club in Washington. And this news forum and seminar on September the 6th will be entitled The State of the Black Farmer. And this will be a news forum that is directed towards the nation and the world. And our keynote speaker will be Mr. Grant of the Black Farmers Agriculturalist Association and a few other important farmers and persons in this movement. And he is going to have his chance to lay out his position on this settlement, which we'll talk about in a moment, and the so-called justice that is being given to black farmers. What is the state of the black farmer? Where is the battle at, and where are we going? Let me ask you this, Mr. Grant. Give us a hint. But what we're trying to do is amplify our brother's voice and help him to have a platform to speak before the world and help him. That's what this United Front work is all about. Give us a hint of what you may say that day as you deliver an address on the state of the black farmer.
Well, as we were just saying, that at the turn of the 19th century that we had about 17 million acres of farmland, and today that we are down to somewhere between 5 and 7 million, that is a great loss to the African-American community as far as economics is concerned. We will talk about the fact that most people have heard by now about a lawsuit called Pickford, which was Pickford versus Glickman, where black farmers sued the U.S. Department of Agriculture for its racist practices in its lending to African American farmers and slowing down the process and all of that. At any rate, that the farmers are being offered $50,000 as compensation for the amount of land that has been taken from them. And that has caused many other problems that actually continues to cause the land to be lost from the African-American community, the black community here. We need to talk about the fact that these farmers still, even after a lawsuit in which the government has never really admitted its discrimination, but you know, reached a settlement, that the practices that brought that lawsuit on are still pretty much the same, that it's not been changed, that these this agency ruined the credit rating of many people, and this lawsuit does nothing to restore that, nor does it do anything to return the land that has been actually stolen from them. So that we'll be going down that avenue, and we'll be talking about the giving dollar figures on the actual economic impact of what it has done to communities across the American forefront here.
All right.
And we don't say that everybody has to farm, but certainly those who want to farm. Everybody doesn't have to farm, but everybody has to eat. And certainly those who wish to farm should be part of that process, especially African-Americans, since that was the reason we were brought here to start out.
All right. And that's a good hint. Dear sisters and brothers, I'm going to bring you on in a minute, Dr. Ridgely, to further conduct the interview. And so what we're saying right now is that we here, as a liberation community, have to make a conscious decision. We are here in the united front, at least those that are working in this ministry of agriculture. And I'm certain I speak for Dr. Ridgely Muhammad and others, Sister Medina and others. We're saying it's time for us to step up now and manifest our support for healthy eating, healthy living, and support for black farmers. And say, and we're also saying that on October the 1st, if you're interested in your city in being a part of this process where a black farmers market will be a part of your day of action, and you're interested in establishing a relationship with black farmers in your area or being a part of this project for the day of action, we need you to step up and email us at nationaldayofaction@yahoo.com. 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 We want to get going now, early. We don't want to wait till the last minute. We want you to be able, if we can pull this off October 1st, to set up permanent relationships. Well, if you have it on October 1st, on November 1st, even though that won't be a national, international day of action and unity, you come back and have another farmer's market. You can make a profit in this. We're not just asking you to go out here and just do a bunch of stuff. I mean, many of us just volunteer all day and all night, and that's no problem. But for others who are entrepreneurial-minded, supporting black farmers don't mean that you can't also do something to support yourself also. We're talking about setting up black farmers' markets on a regular basis where the goods can be sold in our community, and we advertise it and promote it and push it. And brothers and sisters can come out on a monthly basis to support the project. That they also can take subscriptions and become part of buying clubs in these cities, where they become guarantors that every month they are going to put up a certain amount and buy whatever the shipment is. Sometimes the shipment is not always 100% known in advance. It's the kind of the nature of farming. But those that are committed to know whatever's coming through, the watermelon or the rice or the peas, that they're going to get them some goods from some black farmers, and so we can stop talking. We can move beyond rhetoric and move towards a program of liberation. Okay, so we need you all to know, to step up right now and let us know. I know that this is going to happen in Atlanta. I know that, we're going to have, that part of this is going to, that this is going to happen in Washington, D.C. We're going to set this up on the college campus. I'm scheduled to give my, I think, my keynote address from Bowie State University in Maryland. And they were going to be happy out there in Bowie State to help support this farmer's market and have it come to the campus and to support that. But for others who are entrepreneurial-minded, there is some money to be made in taking products from black farmers and within your own network and our network, sell them to the people. And set, and there are people in the community that want to know, they're waiting for you to come to their door and say, yeah, you got them products from the black farmers. They're waiting for you to knock on their door and to be on your route and on your distribution list. And they will be committed and will buy from you if you will work with us to set this thing, to set this process in motion. And with that being said, again, September 6th in Washington, D.C., there's going to be a national news conference, that we are setting up for the black farmers here in the United Front Ministry of Agriculture to support black farmers in their continued battle. Since Pickford, am I right?
That's right, since Pickford.
Since Pickford has been allegedly settled, we want to know about this $50,000. And what does that mean? And we want to let you know in advance, that ain't nothing. We want to know, has justice been done for the destruction of black farmers, for the rape and the robbery and the manipulation of our black farmers? We want to know and go further, brothers and sisters, and get back the land that we are owed as reparations for slavery. But we're preparing you now to understand that if you get back some of that land, you got to show that you can take care of the land you got now and that you can support the land you got now. What good is it to run around and say you for reparations in the form of land for slavery, but you're not prepared to farm and produce on that land? What you going to do, just stand around and look? Anyway, got to build a nation, and we got to build a movement, quick, fast, in a hurry. Dr. Ridgely Muhammad will take over as the host. He's the head. He was on last week. He runs Muhammad Farms. He's a great man to work with, and he will take us further in this education process by continuing with Mr. Grant as we gain more knowledge on the land, the earth, the food coming from the earth, and what it means to be a black farmer and why we must get down with this program. Dr. Ridgely, it's all yours, sir.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Malik, and to Brother Gary. Thank you very much, Brother Malik, for giving me an opportunity to talk to the people who are on the line and on the internet. And I'd also like to thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for allowing me to reach out to others, even though I have the responsibility of running a 1,600-acre farm, which is 1,300 football fields. And my responsibility is to utilize every square inch of it to the best of our ability. And that is very, very difficult. So I don't run the farm. The farm runs me. And every now and then I get a chance to get off the farm and to get involved in the movement. As a matter of fact, the black farmers in 1997 came to me, called me up, and wanted to get to the nation to help them with the fight that they were having with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So I asked Mr. Farrakhan if I could help them, and he said, yes, please, work with them. So since that time, since 1997, I've been working with the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association, with Gary Grant as the president, and I've tried to aid them as best I could and help them as best I could to in their struggle against the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And one thing that when you were talking, it made me think of a situation that happened on the farm. We have we bring in students. We bring in guests to come and work at the farm as visitors just to see what it's like. And one day, about 10:30 in the morning, as the temperatures were getting over 90 degrees and there was about to be a coup, I asked the students, I said, the black students, I said, now, would you want to do this for the rest of your life, every day? Of course they said, no. I said, but your government does not want the black farmers and their families who want to do this every day for the rest of their lives. The government is taking their land, is not going to give them their land back, doesn't want them to do this, yet we all have to eat. Now, don't that make you say, what's up with that? Why would they want to stop somebody from doing this type of work to feed us? And we all piled up in the cities on concrete. What are they up to? So I've been working with Gary with this lawsuit. And the first thing I want to ask Gary is, Gary, did you all go up to Washington to ask for $50,000? Where did that come from? What do y'all really go up there to fight for?
I have no idea where the $50,000 came from. That had to be something that was cooked up in a back room. The farmers that I went with to Washington, D.C., went demanding the return of the land that had been taken and stolen from farmers all across the country illegally. Somehow or another, it was decided that $50,000 would do that. You can't buy back the land for $50,000. You can't buy back 7 million acres of farmland for $50,000. A farmer cannot get a farm for $50,000. So as a nation, have been duped into thinking that a $50,000 payment at one time is, that's real money. And you yourself know what a piece of equipment, farm equipment, costs, and what is the attachments that would need to go with it. That $50,000 would not put one of these farmers back into operating a farm. Also, it seems that more people who had been driven out of farming got the $50,000 than those who were still currently trying to attempting to farm. Also, the various components of, for example, that you reported to the Internal Revenue Service that you got $50,000 extra income. You reported to your State Department of Revenue that you got an additional $50,000 worth of income. It just snowballed, as we could say, that continued to cause the decline of black land ownership and usurping the economic base of African-American communities, especially in the South.
So you're telling me that when they got that $50,000, that the government taxed them on that, and my understanding is that for some people who had Social Security and other benefits, that they deducted that from their benefits.
That's exactly right, because, you know, if you're on Social Security or any what they call social program, Medicare, disability, and you get this money, then suddenly you've had a windfall and your benefits are, you know, taken away. I'm not sure that you lost your Social Security, but what happened with the Social Security piece was that if you did not succeed in if you were not successful in Pickford, then they began to take payments out of your Social Security check to pay back the government. So it was the same basic process that you've lost your farmland, you live to be 65 years old, and now the government wants to take your meager compensation to pay for a debt that was illegally rigged against you in the first place.
And Gary, you remember when we were organizing the black farmers, and we said, well, we want the black farmers to put up 10% of the $50,000 into a fund that we together could do value-added processing, set up production co-ops, and begin to set up an independent marketing system to our cities.
Right.
You remember that?
I remember that discussion, yes.
And then after that, what happened was when the money started being doled out, they'd go eeny, meeny, miny, mo. In other words, you might have three or four people in the same family. They give it to one and not the other.
Yep, that was true. But also back up one piece, that initially when they said that we were going to get $50,000, we asked that be given to us in a lump sum and to let us decipher how it would be distributed. And somehow or another, that got lost in the process too. And giving them the money to various ones or giving it to one person in the family without requiring that it go to through the estate process or so came along, and that also caused further division within the family unit.
So division within the family unit, and then they how many years did it take them doling that money out? They didn't give it they didn't give out at one time. They spread it out over how many years?
It took from 1999 to 2010, 2011. I think that there are people still dealing with that situation. And
so,
I also want to get it clear and get it in here that every black farmer was not in Pickford, and that they have been in courts and been trying to get really better settlement compensations, and they are now being basically thrown to the woods by the wolves by the courts here in this country.
So my understanding is, by them giving that money over that spread it time period,
right,
that did not allow the farmers to organize that money,
exactly,
to make a difference as a group, and therefore it was just spent on consumption items.
Right.
And then for the farmers who went outside of the Pickford to fight the government because they knew that their claims were $200,000, $300,000, $1 million, and not $50,000. They strung them out over a number of years, and now they are throwing that out and going to require those people to pay the government, or else the government is going to take their land.
That's what's happening. My family has been in foreclosure for 30 years, and we, even though we have proven time and time again the discrimination that occurred to my mother and father when they were here and doing the farming, and has been strung out. The fact that it takes you 10 years to figure out how to give somebody $50,000 tells you that you didn't intend for them to be able to rebound or to do anything. And even with what most of the folk will be more familiar with, Pickford 2, that was signed on December 8th, 2010, by President Barack Obama, that the first payments for that money will not even begin to occur until late 2012. Well, the folk who have who filed the claims pretty much are either they're going to be dead, sick, in nursing homes, won't know where papers are. They have lost the land. When you lost the home, you had to move out of it. So as we talk about even the home foreclosures across the country, the nation here now, that black farmers said this has been happening to them not since just 1981, but actually since the early 1970s. But the Pickford class covers only from a 15-year period from 1981 to 1996.
So in other words, the government has worked to displace the black farmer. And I know in your community, you were telling me that in North Carolina at one time there were 4,000 black farmers, but now there's how many left?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 400. And all of that has taken place within about a 20-year period span of time.
Now, I also understand that in your state, that your state is one of the largest hog producers in the world, but there are some major problems associated with that. I know you've been involved with the environmental struggle of the black people in eastern North Carolina. Can you tell us a little bit about how these new type of farms have replaced the black farmers and what does that cause, problems that causes for the communities that they are placed in?
Well, we believe in what are known as family farms, and we believe that families ought to be, who want to work on the land and all, should be out there. What has replaced, and especially tobacco here in North Carolina, is the industrialization of growing hogs, where you have anywhere from 4 to 5,000 animals caged up in a growing facility for their entire lifetime. Animals that are producing 4 pounds of waste per day each, and all of this waste is being washed out of these barns into open cesspools that are 30 feet deep that cut right through the natural aquifers that are serving as people's wells. And so we have contamination of groundwater, we have contamination of surface water, we have contamination of the land, we have contamination of the air, and all of these pieces, and the majority of these facilities are located in low-income and primarily African-American communities.
So in some counties, there's more hogs than people, right?
In North Carolina, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 million pigs growing in eastern North Carolina. And, yes, that's more pigs than people in the entire state.
Mm. So, go ahead.
And once upon a time, we had some 10,000 farmers, the family farmers that were growing these animals. And today we have less than 3,000, or somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 folk growing the 10 million pigs, because they are corporately owned and has basically reintroduced the system of sharecropping back into America's culture, because the farmer is having to bow to the corporate pressure of building to specifications, keeping it there, and feeding the animals what they say feed them, and the animals are being shut up and not being allowed to. So the meat is actually stressed by the time it gets to the grocery store because of the way that the animals are grown, that they are using more antibiotics in protecting the pigs than we are using in protecting the citizens of the country.
So what happens when you eat the animals that has all these antibiotics, the animal has the bacteria that's being produced now have, you know, they're immune to it. So now that when we have these same problems and we try to get a shot, it doesn't work because
right.
Our body has eaten these antibodies from the animals that because of all of those drugs that the animals have been fed. So now we can't even fight off certain diseases because of all the antibiotics that they put into the animals to keep them alive in that very harsh and nasty condition.
Exactly. And not only are pigs, but also poultry is being produced that way as well, and that also that these animals are being fed growth hormones, which many people are beginning to talk about how rapidly our young girls especially are developing breasts and, you know, becoming sexually active and all of that. And if you're giving what we're consuming is a growth hormone, so it just makes our bodies mature that much quicker, and that hasn't helped us either.
And I've also, they finally admitted something that I heard about 5 or 6 years ago, the poultry industry has finally admitted that they do, in fact, feed the chickens arsenic.
Right. The chickens are fed arsenic to help them live in the conditions, the crowded conditions. I mean, the chickens don't even have room enough to turn around. The sow pig, which is the mother pig, she lives in a cage all of her life, and she doesn't even – it's not even room enough in there for her to turn around. I mean, it's just – real. It's inhumane, and it just treats animals that – it stresses the animals out. Pigs are not dumb. They are one of the most intelligent animals on the earth, you know.
Well, you know, in this video called Food Incorporated, they are talking about the cattle and these feedlot operations and that E. coli that is death to humans is a new bacteria that was really produced in the gut of cows in response to the cows being fed protein, of which part of that is meat, instead of the cows being able to graze the grass as they were made to as a herbivore, they are now being force-fed meat into their system, and now their bodies is producing the E. coli, which comes out in the feces and the urine, and then that is by some of the big organic producers in California are sprayed directly onto the vegetables, and it winds up in the stores and with E. coli, and they try to put it on the Mexicans for not washing their hands from coming from the bathroom. That does not come from human feces. That comes from untreated cow manure of the cows that have been housed and fed in these huge feedlot operations, and the cows are being fed meat in their diet instead of being fed grass.
That is true. Cows are true vegetarians. And one of the questions that people are not asking is, where is my food coming from? And the same situation that you described there about the cattle manure is the same thing that happens with this pig manure. We call it pig poop. It is also being aerated, sprayed on ground, sprayed on crops. I just don't think people understand when they hear that E. coli has been found on lettuce, has been found on tomatoes, that they understand that this is actual animal waste that is being sprayed directly on the product. Now, when I was growing up as a child on the farm, we used to use the droppings from the pigs. We cleaned out the barn every year and put the manure on the farmland as we turned it in preparation for planting. And now that they are telling farmers that this stuff is organic, there's nothing organic about it with all of the stuff that they've been feeding the animals inside of these facilities.
So in other words, there's no way that the poo can be organic when they got the chemicals in what they're feeding the animal that makes the poo.
Well, not only the chemicals of what they're feeding, but every... I would venture to say that for every animal that is slaughtered, everything that is not edible is being ground up and made into feed and fed back to the animals, that the next crop of them.
Right, and that's where this mad cow disease comes from, is in fact feeding cows cows.
Cows. Exactly.
And it makes them crazy, and it also kills us. So in other words, when they ran the family farm off, and as I spoke last week, when the black farmers went to the government to borrow money to raise crops, the government said, well, you have to get rid of your small cattle, your small hog operation, your small chicken operation, your vegetable operation. If you want to borrow money, you can only grow cotton, peanuts, soybeans, grain sorghum, and corn. You can't grow those other things because we won't loan you the money. So then we had to cut all those little small, what they call subsistence productions, which kept money coming into the household, and we became completely dependent on the government dole out. And then what they would do was slow down the dole out. They would give the white boy his money in January, he could put in the bank, and then they would hold the black man's money to April and May and make him come every time he needed money, him coming with an invoice. So the master can dole out him enough money to pay that particular bill, but then the farmer had to go back twice to deal with the same purchaser, whereas the white boy only had to do it one time, which means that the black farmer was held up and slowed down, and then when his crop didn't come in because he missed some timing on when he had to do something, then he couldn't pay the money back, and then the interest started increasing on the debt, and that's how they wind up getting the black farmers in trouble. Loaning the money, but loaning it to them later and later and later, making them make mistakes, and then coming confiscating their land over the mistakes they were made to make. And now the big companies are taking over. I just saw today Monsanto backed down Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods was fighting Monsanto about how their genetically modified crops were infiltrating or getting it into the organic crops of farmers that were close to them and basically contaminating those crops so that no longer were they organic. And Monsanto pushed up on Whole Foods to stop that fight. So Whole Foods finally stopped fighting against Monsanto. Now, let's explain who Monsanto. Monsanto is the one that created Agent Orange in Vietnam. Monsanto is the ones who's creating these Terminator genes that, in fact, you buy corn or seed, and it will produce another seed that is dead that will not grow again, so you got to come back to them every year. It's Monsanto who got the United States, when they went to Iraq, to tell all the Iraqi farmers, you got to give up your seed and get Monsanto seeds so that you can buy from us every year, because you can't store our seeds because they'll die on you. So you got to get rid of your heirloom seeds. These are seeds that will grow a crop, they'll produce a crop, that will take a seed, you could use it for the next year. They made them get rid of that and get the Monsanto seeds. So we have here a culture that has developed of death, whereas the black farmers had a culture of life for people. They have taken us off the land and then produced a culture of death on the land and got white family farmers who are so pressed with paying their bills that they do whatever they have to do is necessary. In the meantime, they're killing the whole planet and they're destroying the health of the people that they're trying to feed.
That is true. And I just want to add this because I have not been saying it. You know, I believe that what's happening to my family right now is retaliatory, and just in case that stuff is sped up because of this interview this evening, I want Brother Malik and the listening audience to understand that we will be calling on them for assistance in dealing with this situation. And it's not just my family. There are hundreds of families still out here that have not been able to reach a settlement and with this government that has caused us or brought us to this place in our history.
And I want us to understand that what Gary Grant, his family, these other black farmers, you see, they have what you call real estate. They have what you call real assets. And you might have a job that's paying you $100,000 in the city. But guess what? That is not an asset. That's a job that you don't have no power over. But if you own a couple hundred acres of land, you may be worth $1 million, okay?
Or more.
So you have you have wealth. Now America is so poor, she owes China, she owes these countries debt. America is confiscating assets, and black farmers have assets. They want to confiscate those assets and sell those assets to China to get back some of that money that the Chinese have that from America because of the trade deficits and the borrowing. So America is trying to pay off her debt to China by taking assets from the black farmers and other people and sell it to China. I would bet you that the White House has already been sold and that the Obama is renting the White House from China. China is buying cropland. China is buying federal parks. So America is for sale. And the easiest place to push up on are black folk, because we're not organized. We don't know what's going on. We don't understand the value of land and the value of the black farmers and what they're doing. So we allow the government to push up on them and to take the only assets that we really own as a people, which is real estate.
And understand that they are taking this, even if they are taking it and not even compensating the landowner for it. So we do lose all of the real value in the process.
So we just want you to know, October 1, when you come out, you're going to hear from more black farmers. You get a chance to meet with them and develop a long-term relationship. So once they're gone back, you continue a relationship, set up your buying clubs. You go to MuhammadFarms.com, you'll see the Ministry of Agriculture resource list, and on that list you will find someone close to you that you can begin to contact with that has a buying club, and when these black farmers come up, you all work together and develop a relationship so you can buy food from them year-round, not just one day.
Not just one day. That's the thing, you know, we think we've been so brainwashed into this, you know, it's like I gave at the office, and that's supposed to take care of the situation. It does not take care of the situation by having a black farmers market one Saturday, one Sunday after church. This has to be an ongoing thing if we're going to regain any economic sound footing, and it is going to need to be based on our relationships, the country cousins to the city cousins.
And the country cousins, like Brother Malik said, can help the city cousins to set up businesses. Why, there are no stores in the black community owned by black people. Now, here you have a chance to meet directly with the source of the product. You can set up your own stores, your own produce stands in the black community, put your own people to work, put your own children to work, and now we can develop an economic base. And also, I just want the people in the city, please, please begin to produce something. Please begin to manufacture something. So when we drive 8, 10, 12 hours to bring you produce, we can buy your product, your manufactured product, and wholesale, take it back down south or take it to our area and sell to them so we can keep our trucks rolling and not drive one way full and drive back empty and paying the same gas and the same tolls and the same time that we have to spend. We need for you and the cities to get busy as well. Start producing something for yourself so that we can buy from you when we go there and bring it back home. We got to have a two-way trade situation, not a one-day, one-way trade situation. We got to think of a constant trade, production, and commerce between our city cousins and our country cousins.
And as Brother Malik is saying, this has to be a movement. It is not, you know, we're going to run out here and yell one day. It is a movement. It will take time, and it's going to take education and all of us working together in order to make sure that this comes about.
Well, thank you very much, Gary, for coming on. I know this is late for you because it's late for me, but we hope that there are people still awake out there.
Let's get up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. I got to get back out here and pick some watermelons in the morning. So I thank you very much for
thank you.
And hopefully we can.
Malik, so very much for the opportunity to get the story out there, and we're looking forward to continuing being a part of the movement here for black empowerment and economic development.
Well, thank you very much, Gary, and thank you very much, Brother Malik, for having us on, and we pray that we'll be able to come on at other times and to continue to educate our people as to what's really going on out there in the countryside that affects them right up there in the city side. So, Brother Malik, are you still there? Well,
no, sir. Like, yes, sir. He's not there. Go ahead. Continue what you were saying, brother. We got 5 seconds.
Oh, we got 5 seconds. Tune in next week, same time, same station, 11 o'clock Wednesday, to make sure you continue your education on what's going on in the world that affects your everyday life. Thank you very much, and may God bless you. As-salamu alaykum and peace. Hotep, Irie.
Black power, everybody. You heard it here first. To join the new Black Panther Party, hit up nbpphq@yahoo.com. To join the Day of Action, it's nationaldayofaction@yahoo.com. To join, text, email 314-327-5222 or 502-299-8530. Thanks for tuning in as usual. Tuning in for Saturday at 11 p.m. Black Power.